You're listening to the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and on podcast maybe. My name is Alan Wares. While the rest of the football world twiddles its thumbs waiting for the new season to start, we're looking at power chair football. The 2017 FIPFA World Cup takes place in Florida in the first week of July, and Brighton's Matt Francis is there representing England. Meanwhile, the Brighton team themselves have just had their best ever season, finishing third in the Muscular Dystrophy UK Premiership. Joining me today to discuss these and many other topics, I'm delighted to welcome Chris Hammonds and Brighton PFC player Seb Finch. Gentlemen, how are we?
Good.
Thanks for coming in indeed. Seb, let's start with you. You're the Brighton PFC player. Obviously an Albion fan. What was your first Albion experience?
The first game was with Dean in 2004 against Brighton playing Notts County. I don't really remember. I had to ask Dad last night. We went with Phil from our football shirt.
Oh, Uncle Phil, yeah.
Yeah, he took us to the game.
Which
is, Dad's not really into football. I had to convince him that he likes it.
All right. And has he grown to like it since?
Yeah, he drives all the time now.
Oh, okay.
Drove the season ticket, he goes with me.
Great stuff. So you don't remember it. So that means that, I mean, do you remember the sort of the first experience when you really did get into football then?
The first game at the Amex.
Ah, right.
Was the real.
It was emotional. I think everyone was kind of welled up on that, weren't they? So in that time, I mean, if we're talking about the first time was 13 years ago, have you got a favourite player in all that time?
In all that time?
Or even before, even beforehand, and possibly what people have been telling you about, you know, times before?
Probably Calderham.
Yeah, Calderham. Any particular reason, on pitch or off pitch stuff?
Both.
Yeah?
Just really nice guy. Okay. Always gave us all on the pitch.
I was about to say, so, you know, obviously he did a lot of stuff with Albion in the community, but did you get to meet him and know him personally in the end?
I met him once. He came to a session and played in a manual chair against us. That was quite a while ago.
Yeah. How did he get on?
Yeah, he wasn't great.
You can say that because you can drive your we'll talk about your go-kart in a minute, but you know you can drive that around like a demon, like, you know, Lewis Hamilton. But you know, for us mere mortals who, you know, struggle with the wheelchair, you know, it's
It takes a lot of getting used to.
Yeah,
you've got to be able to control the chair before you can
absolutely
try and play football.
So Caldy was an enthusiastic supporter of what you were doing. Fantastic. Chris, welcome to Radio Reverb. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, morning.
Tell us about your Albion supporting history.
Yeah, I've been a lifelong Albion supporter. Obviously, I was aware of the interview and trying to think, I'm much like Seb. I can't really remember the first game. My mum and dad weren't really into football at all. And it was actually through my next-door neighbour, a good friend of mine, Sarah, and her dad. Her dad decided to take her down to the football and wanted someone to come with her. So
when are we talking about here? Just spill the beans.
So this is, I was trying to work it out last night, actually. I think it must have been about 1980, 81. That season. So, yeah, we were in the first division.
Yeah. Do you remember the opponents?
The exact game, I cannot remember, though, unfortunately. It's just one of those. But I do remember the first experience. Just, we were in the East End. It's my first real experience of a big crowd as well. And didn't really know what to expect, but you go through the turnstiles and you can't see the pitch, and you walk up the bank over the top and you see the pitch and you think, wow. And I guess I was hooked from that point onwards.
Yeah, I mean, was it a sunny day, do you remember?
It was sunny, yeah. So yeah. I think it must have been start of season or end of season. It was,
and that
quite
pitch
warm.
Was kind of fluorescent green when you first see it, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, brilliant feeling.
So you know it was 80, 81, that kind of time. You can't remember the opponents. No, do you remember any of the players?
At the time, yeah, from that time, we've got the likes of Moseley and Gordon Smith and, those sorts of players. So Robinson towards the end of my experience at the Goldstones, yeah.
Sure. So in the intervening 3.5 decades, have you got a particular player that sort of stands out either from the Goldstone, the Witherdeen or the Amex days? Any one player that you think, he was the business?
Well, obviously, Bobby Zamora was one of the big ones. When I first saw him playing, I swore to myself that I would see him in an England shirt. So that was... that was good to see, but I guess one of my all time favourites. I don't know why, Gary Hart.
You don't know why. I'm going to press you on this. Why?
He just had a bit of grit about him, a bit of turn of speed, and I like the way in terms of when we first acquired him, it was a bit surreal. £1,000 in a kit.
That's it, yeah.
Stansted Rovers, yeah.
I think even he himself is kind of... I think he's embarrassed and proud of at the same time, the fact that anyone would actually pay anything for him. I mean, he's still ridiculously humble. The fact that anyone would pay anything for him in the first place. But then you realise that, bearing in mind that millions and millions are spent on so many other players nowadays, you know, and his is a mere grand... You know, there's an element of comedy to it, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a lot of people ribbing us for that. You know, who's your new striker? Yeah. How much you pay for him?
Yeah.
1,000 and kit.
Well, actually, I mean, probably did... I can't remember who it was. It was it wasn't Harlow, was it? It was someone in Essex.
Stansted,
of course it was, yes. Yeah, they benefited, you know. They were good on it. That's, yeah, and yeah, I mean, whatever it was, 100 years that he was at the club, and you know full well he put in...
Yeah, he gave his all.
He gave his all.
Every match on the pitch,
absolutely.
He was 100%.
Now, we're here to talk about power chair football. I'll go with you first, Chris, before I turn to Seb. Tell us about your involvement within the Brighton and Hove Albion power chair team.
Obviously, I'm a parent of Lewis Hammonds' dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's just one of those things that you've got a disabled son. What's he do for... He's very competitive. He's got quite a bit of a... aggro about him, he can be on the pitch.
Is that true, Seb?
Yeah, it's true. Very competitive.
Yeah. And it's what do I do with him? What does he do? We tried all sorts of things in terms of... We took him to art lessons, but I do remember walking to art lessons on a Saturday morning past the football pitch, and you'd look on the football pitch and think, why can't Lewis do this? So,
Whereabouts in Brighton? Oh, I assume we're talking Brighton. Whereabouts are we talking?
No, this was up in when we lived in Hayes.
Okay, right, yeah.
He was born in Brighton, but we moved when he was one up towards Hayes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, it was what do we do with him? And obviously, watching football was something we liked doing. So, I had a little nose around Albion in the community and what they did. And we found that they did some power chair football down in Port Slade, I think it was. Seb,
yeah,
wasn't
it was Port Slade. Yeah. Saturday sessions.
Yeah, and that's where I first met you, I think.
Yeah.
We went down there and saw what it was about, and it started there, really.
So how long had the power chair team been going at the time? I mean, do you recall?
It wasn't the central team then, it was more just sort of kick about on a Saturday. Didn't really have enough players to put a team in. Sort of once Lewis started coming, and then Matt got involved as well.
Mm-hmm. Matt Francis, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so, I mean, what did you have at the time? Did you all have motorised chairs, sort of not dissimilar to what you've got now, or were you... How did it work at the time?
It was just regular day chairs.
Mm-hmm.
We had a tyre, you cut it in half, and strap that around your feet with some bungee cords.
You make it sound like Tarzan swinging from, you know...
Yeah. It was pretty different then to what it is now. I remember as well, there was people that could walk there as well. At these sessions, just be careful not to hit people.
I was about to say, I mean, all you're missing really with the tyres on the front is bull horns and maybe sort of like, you know, some spikes on there. But I've just got visions of Seb and the lads, they're all turning up with sort of spikes on their wheels and, you know, Boudicca style. And
it's not quite Ben-Hur, is it, at the moment? Sometimes you wish it was.
So when you first took Lewis there, I mean, did he take to it like a duck to water? Or?
Yeah, I remember the first session when we came back, it's, Dad, I want to do this, we've got to do this, where do I get my tyre? And... So, yeah, during the week, my neighbour's owns a garage, so I popped round there, got a reject tyre, and spent... quite tough to saw through the tyres. I never realised what was in a tyre until then. But, yeah, we cut it off, got some bungee cords, and sort of made a way of trying to somewhat safely strap it to the front of his chair, and we were off.
Sorry, remind me, how long ago were we talking about here, Seb?
This is probably... about 9 years ago, 10 years ago.
Okay, so this was kind of... And the Albion community were running this. You say at Port Slade. So at Port Slade Community College?
Or school, yeah.
The academy, whatever it's called, the academy these days, or...
Yeah.
What was it one? Okay.
I can't remember that name or what it is. Yeah, we don't train there any longer.
I was about to say, it's like pubs in Brighton. They're always changing their names, the schools around here. So you had your regular... I mean, did you not damage your chair at all?
Not too much. The headlights usually get knocked off or something, but... It wasn't too bad.
So it makes it sound more like a demolition derby.
Yeah, as Seb said, there were people on foot as well, so there was pushers as well. So you'd have people in manual chairs with a bumper strapped to that and someone pushing them, and they, you know, depending on the sportiness of the pusher, always had a turn of speed that a power chair couldn't keep up with, which I remember Lewis finding particularly frustrating.
So you're saying that Lewis came along and Seb was already there, so how did you get involved in the first place, Seb?
I got turned on to it from... the school I was at in Worthing. I wanted to play more sport, sort of similar to Lewis. Mm-hmm. And they knew of Albany Community running these sessions, so they turned me onto it, and yeah, I went along once, and that was it.
Right.
Yeah, every week.
Right, and had you been to see the Albion by then? So you kind of, you were into football?
Yeah, I've been to that game.
Uh-huh.
But then I wasn't into it as much as I am now. Again, just mum and dad don't like football.
Right.
It's difficult, so.
Right. So you obviously your dad sort of ferries you around, but, you know, so are your parents kind of really turned on to, well, just the Albion football and the power chair football now?
Dad is, yeah.
Right.
Dad does all the repairs for the chairs. He's a team mechanic. He's got a big...
Oh, right.
Big tool bag, taking them apart. And we don't have a physio, we have a mechanic.
Yes. I've just got visions of all the dads along the side there being cheerleaders going, rah, rah, with your pom. Are you going to do that, Chris? No, don't go there. Don't go there. So how has it then sort of kind of manifested itself along? How has it evolved? Because like you say, if you're saying you're in your own personal wheelchair with tyres on, which you're risking, I mean, it's the kind of mobility equivalent of going into a game of football and everyone's got concrete boots on and you risk sort of whacking your legs. So how did it all evolve?
Look back at it and I know what you think, Seb, but it was dangerous, wasn't it?
It was dangerous.
It just takes a bit of speed going forward and the bungee cord to not quite hold and the tyre to go over the front, and you're running over a tyre and you're catapulting yourself in the air. It was dangerous.
And did you have a bad crash?
I had one playing football. It's not sure over once.
Yeah, it's not ideal. So how do these things evolve? I mean, is it the technology from without, or is it something that the club themselves have actually been part of the evolution of the wheelchair football?
I think the league was already up and running then. I'm not sure about the chair. Chairs were in development. It was just a case of getting enough players to be able to go and enter into a competition.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have 6 players to be able to enter. I know the first season we went up to Nottingham, we didn't have proper chairs. We were still in our regular chairs.
Yeah.
We had slightly better bumpers, but not proper chairs.
So with these tyres there, have they kind of drawn up a formal set of rules that actually the likes of tyres are really not a good idea anymore?
Yeah, you wouldn't be allowed to play with a tyre.
Right.
You could do it in your own time, but not a proper game. There's a full list of spec.
Yeah, the full technical specification on the chairs now.
Sure. So for those that have not actually watched Power Chair Football just yet, either of you, give us a quick... 30-second rundown of the basics of the rules.
Chris, you're the manager.
Okay, so it's a four-side game, so 4 players on the pitch at any one time per team. It's played on a basketball pitch, so it's an indoor game. You have rolling subs.
Excuse the pun. Yeah.
So you can substitute players in and out. You have 3 outfield players and 1 nominated goalkeeper. But unlike the running game, your goalkeeper is allowed, or does quite often spend a large portion of the time out of the box. I guess one of the big differences with the running game is it's two-dimensional, so it's played on the deck. You're not lobbing the ball over your competitors. So it's about finding triangles and the gaps and running into or moving into space.
Do you call it running, Seb?
Probably would.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go on. Carry on. Yeah.
Yeah. So 4 players. It's two-dimensional. The risk or the key area of the game that has the most controversy is what's called the 2-on-1 rule,
which is
so this is about trying to the rule is in place to prevent basically. All 4 players trying to push the ball. If you can imagine a ball in the middle and 4, it's going to go nowhere. So you want the ball out and moving. So to allow that to happen, we have the 2-on-1 rule, you have from the where the ball is positioned, you have a 3-meter radius from the centre from the ball,
mm-hmm.
and in that radius, you're only allowed the 2 players. If one of your teammates comes within that 3-meter space, then the referee blows for a free kick.
Okay.
So that prevents the ball being locked up and allows the ball to be moved.
Why is it controversial?
Because 3 metres can be a little subjective. I guess it's like the offside equivalent. So when's a player level, not level?
Right.
Some refs are quite hot on it, some are not so hot. And you have to identify those refs, and we do. We plan and we look ahead as to what what our referees are going to be, and there are certain little nuances, and whether they're hot on 2-on-1 or whether they tend to let them slide.
Well, you can judge them by it, because it does sound, when the way you describe it, it sounds like an anti-bullying rule. You know, it's, you got, hang on, you can't have 2-on-1, that's not fair. So, no, I take the point, because it's, there's the, you know, with only four, yeah you don't want to have, I mean, effectively sort of shielding and guarding, you know, and I assume that, therefore, I suppose there is contact as such, but you're not actually allowed to go deliberately sort of crashing someone.
No, and the refs will give fouls against, and if they see they're particularly aggressive, then they'll issue cards, and
right,
and if they get really bad, the red card comes out.
You've been red carded, Seb?
No, just yellow.
For?
Persistent fouling.
Persistent fouling, okay. Okay, yeah. We'll come back to discipline in a minute. But isn't there some, because there's a kind of a D in front of the goal, isn't there? Kind of an area, isn't there, which... Is it certain players are allowed in and certain aren't, or numbers
so,
again?
So the other bit then, so the 2-on-1 rule is slightly different when you're defending. So you can park that rule in as much as your goalkeeper can count as a second player when you're within your own penalty box.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're defending, your goalkeeper is allowed to be within that 3 metres. So you defend your goal effectively with goalkeeper and one outfield player.
Mm-hmm.
So the objective when you're attacking is to try and get it through those two players.
So there isn't a rule about the number of attacking players that can enter the area. It's any player can be anywhere as long as...
Not the number of attackers, as long as they're not committing a 2-on-1.
Sure.
From a defensive point of view, though, you are only allowed to, and you would give away a free kick if a third player enters the box.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So... Do you find these rules easy to abide by, Sam? I mean, is there anything you think, well, actually, then we could tweak this rule, or...?
I think they're fairly easy to abide by. Like Chris says, the 2-on-1 is the main one that can be a bit controversial.
Mm.
Certain refs would give it, and you'll think you're far enough apart, and a different ref wouldn't have given it. So that's the one that can be frustrating.
Sure. So I've got to talk about discipline, because what I'm going to do is going to go through... Actually, let's talk through the Albion squad first, and then work out who the great players are and who the dirty ones are. Let's go through that. So you say there's six in the squad, so you've got a kind of a permanent group of six.
Yep.
So go through them one by one.
So there's myself.
Yep.
Matt Francis.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis Hammonds.
Mm-hmm.
Dred Baxter. And then last season was Ollie Pink.
Mm-hmm.
And this season it would be Sam Elliott.
Sure.
And so, Freddie.
And Freddie.
So have you got a regular goalie?
Well, up until last season we sort of Freddie, did. We had it? Freddie. Freddie was our goalkeeper. But with the advent of the new chairs this season, he's got a new chair and he's really found a new lease of life. And we're partly thinking that he's a bit wasted in goals, so we've brought him out on pitch, and this season he's turned out as a top scorer, hasn't he, in the regional league. So he's really, really outperforming.
Okay, so as a squad, obviously you have to get on as good friends and what have you. So this is where I get to do the sort of like, okay, start your bitching of all your colleagues now, mate. So tell us about the characters that you've got. I mean, you've named them all, but tell us about the character that you've got to make your team work so well.
So obviously Matt is captain. He is the most vocal.
Who knew?
Yeah, he's been described before as quite a character. Lewis is...
His dad says competitive.
Yeah, you can see the red mist. He's the one I'm amazed that hasn't been booked, to be fair. He's never been booked.
Really? Even with the red mist?
Even with the red... He should have been.
In the National League, he's never been booked.
He has his own version of road rage, and he's never been...
No.
He even got a ticket for it.
You can see it happening, and when it does, I sub him, bring him off.
Okay, so, right. Matt's the vocal one.
Yeah.
Lewis is the competitive one.
Yeah.
Sorry, who did you say? With the road rage. Go on. What about the others?
That's outside.
Freddie, in terms of, we always take the mick out of Fred a little bit because he can be very understated.
What do you mean?
He's not very demonstrative about things. So,
right. So a little bit of a shrinking violin.
The best thing was that celebration against Northern Thunder.
We think he raised an eyebrow, don't we?
Equalised. And, it was a big goal for us.
Yes.
And the most he did was raise one eyebrow. Didn't smile.
He's the Chris Hughton of... Powerchair,
yes,
football,
exactly.
You know, certainly not taken to emotional outbursts.
Yeah.
Okay, Freddie, if you listen to this, mate, they do love you, but, you know, raise both eyebrows if you get a mo. Did you say you got Sam and Ollie as well?
Yep. I'd say Ollie can be flat out Freddy. But, yeah, and just say it is.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, I don't know his match yet.
Sam's just joined us, hasn't he?
Okay, yeah. And Seb, tell us about Seb Finch.
Me? I don't know.
Okay, Chris, you're going to have to do this. Tell us about Seb on the pitch and off the pitch.
So Seb, as a player, he's the one player I can ask to... He will do the dirty side of the game.
The persistent fouling.
So for Seb, there are certain set pieces that we have, and Seb is very good at not being fazed by whatever the opposition will say to him. In terms of, you know, you get a bit of verbals on the pitch as you would in any running game.
You're sledging in power chair football.
Yeah, it all happens.
Wow.
And Seb will ignore that, and he will do what's needed in terms of making the blocks, making the right runs.
Focused.
And he's very reliable in that, and so that's one of Seb's key attributes.
In that case, Seb, without swearing, mate, without swearing, Seb, what sort of sledging are we talking about here?
It's more just sort of blocking people off, and they don't like it. It's not that swearing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So if you're not going to do it without swearing, then fair enough. We'll make a recording of
it
later.
To be fair, I think Seb's on the receiving end, and he doesn't react to it. A lot of our other players do react to it, and will do what the opposition are asking them to do.
Right.
I trust Seb to not do that and do the job that he's there to do, and he'll do that without.
Who's your chief sledger then? Who's your chief verbals?
Who gives it back for us?
Yeah.
Matt. That'd be Matt. Yeah. That'll be Matt. Yeah.
No, to be fair, sorry, Matt, I know you're listening to this. I have seen the Red Mist descend with him as well. So usually, actually, I do have to say this. And I know that him not being here without the right of reply, but I have actually put it to him personally. We saw him playing, we saw you guys playing in the Champions League. It was a very, very bad sort of uplink to watch it. And I don't think the game was going particularly well. And if he could, I think that actually Matt would have leapt out of his chair and knocked the referee into the middle of next week. He was slightly cross.
Yeah.
Competitive.
Yeah.
But together, were you talking about strength and focus and the sort of the calm together, Chris, that must blend to make something pretty good.
Yeah, I'd say this team's been there for a good few years now. And it's getting better and better every season. I say most of the players are all Brighton fans. We do have Greg. He's a Portsmouth-based player.
Oh, dear.
Chelsea fan, though.
And is a Chelsea fan to boot and plays for Brighton.
Very confused young lad, yes.
Greg's got his part to play in the team as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's just got his new chair.
Yep.
So we're waiting for that. That'll be good to see him in that for the new season.
Sure. We'll talk about the technology and the chairs in a second, but we've got to talk, when we're talking about the squad here, we've got to talk about your lad, Chris Lewis, who, like I say, the competitive fella. Now, he reached a landmark this season, and what I saw was, I thought was fantastic, the club was able to mark it. So tell us about the goal-scoring landmark he reached last season.
Yeah, so he hit his 100th goal. Mm-hmm. So we've been playing, we worked out 6 seasons, and we just... We're working back to see where we were with goals in the squad, and yeah, Lewis was approaching the 100, and he got that on the last weekend.
Double hat trick, right?
Yes,
a double hat trick. How selfish is that? made sure he got it.
So yeah, no, that was quite something. So we made a big thing of it at the time, and big high fives going on. But we came back after that, and we were presented. It was at the Derby game. Was it Derby?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Derby game, pitch side. Went out and was presented with was completely unexpected on the shirt. We knew we were going pitch side.
Yeah.
But there's a little montage up on the screens at the Amex, which I didn't hear a word of because the crowd was too loud down pitch side. But it all looked pretty good. And then he was presented with the Hammonds 100 shirt, which was a really nice thing.
And did Dan shed a tear?
I was quite proud of him.
All right, how many goals? Do you know how many goals you've got, Seb? For
it's about 40, I think.
Over how many seasons?
Six.
Okay. And who did you say Freddie was the leading scorer last season
in the in the regionals? Yes.
Oh, in the regionals. That's kind of like the B
South,
team,
South,
isn't it?
South East region. Well, it's still the first team.
Oh, okay.
But it plays a greater number of teams in the South East region. Not every team. I mean, there's a lot more teams in power chair football now than when we first started.
Mm-hmm.
And there are teams, there's a lot more competition, but a lot of teams can't necessarily commit to playing nationally because that's done over a full weekend. So there are a lot more teams based southeast that don't play nationally, and we play in that league as well.
Okay, I mean, I was about to say, Seb, tell us about the National League setup, because I mean, it's we're talking about teams from all over the country, but you zero in on one place.
We go to Nottingham for 6 weekends a year. That's supposed to be like the centre. Because obviously we're running further south. You've got Northern Thunder who are in Newcastle. So we go there 6 weekends a year. We'll play 4 or 5 games. And then, yeah, they do that for both divisions. So it's, they do 12 weekends, mm-hmm. 6 for the Premier League, 6 for the Championship.
Got ya. And so I assume, therefore, that, I mean, do you sort of take it in turns to play, or do you sort of play the same players? How do you sort of operate who's going to be playing? Do you know the opposition well enough, Chris, that you're going to work out who's going to be playing which game? Or
Yeah.
So All right, okay.
I do a lot of research. I watch a lot of the games. Yeah. So when these guys aren't playing, then I'll be up there watching the games, making notes about how the other teams play, where their points of weakness are. I've got my book.
All right.
So I know where their strengths and weaknesses are, and we try and set up to match and outwit them. So, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, as I said at the top of the show, you've just had your best ever season. Tell us about that.
So, yeah, we came third nationally, first regionally, and we went to the Champions League for the first time. We finished sixth there.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the big one that you've been improving year on year, because you've been taking part for quite a while, has been the Premier League or the Premiership. Muscular Dystrophy UK Premiership. Who are your main rivals then? I mean, if you really believe that you're sort of pushing on, that you can get a crack at the title, who are your main rivals?
Aspire and Northern Thunder are the two that finished above us this year.
Okay, whereabouts are they based?
Aspire from Watford,
mm-hmm.
and Northern Thunder are from Newcastle.
Right, what do you reckon it's going to take to actually get past them?
I
mean, have you beaten them either?
We haven't beaten Northern Thunder yet.
Uh-huh.
We've beaten Aspire. I think, you know, we're getting closer every year. The storylines are getting smaller. You know, 4 years ago when we got promoted, they were beating us 8-0 at times. And this season against Aspire, we won the first game 2-1 and lost the second one 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Thunder, we lost 2-0 and 2-1, I think.
Okay.
So it's chosen. West Brom were the other team that we used to struggle against. We got 2 draws against them this season.
Mm-hmm.
We should have had a win.
So a Northern Thunder and Aspire kind of really seeing Brighton and Hove Albion as real genuine sort of, you know, rivals and contenders now.
I hope so.
Yeah, they are now.
Yeah,
they are now. Those three teams, West Brom, Aspire, and Northern Thunder, have dominated the top three positions in power chair football since the league's inception.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first season that top three's been broken, and we've broken it.
So what have you done that's improved both your standing and your position?
I think when we look at our team and the top teams, and I would certainly say we're now there, we're certainly in the top four, one of the top four, if not top three, from our league position. I think when you look at those teams, they have one very strong player, and we have in Brighton with Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Matt's very important to us. And then we have the backup, the rest of the team. And I think the rest of our squad is now easily comparable, if not better, to the other members of the other squads. There's always a second strong player, and we've got that. And I think we've got a strong three now.
Mm-hmm.
So our first 4 or 5 players on the pitch are better man for man than the opposition.
Okay, so how do you fancy your chances next season then?
I think we've got a good shout.
Yeah.
I really do think we've got a good shout.
It's quite a leap to go from sort of like your ever improving sort of fourth to third or fifth to third to actually then sort of toppling everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, no, our first season just missing relegation.
We've always finished higher.
Every season we've finished a higher position so far, but yeah, third, that's only 2 spots left now. So
go on. I mean, is it worth putting a punt down on you?
I'm quite cautious in my nature. I would say top two with a shout at
you
first.
You reckon it's a steady climb? You're not going to necessarily...
Do you feel it's a big leap still
to get past those two?
I do think it's possible. As Seb mentioned, we haven't beaten Northern Thunder yet. But those games we've played have been real tight. And we wait to see what's going to happen over the close season in terms of what their team's going to look like when it starts the new season. But as I understand it, at the moment, they do have a few issues. Their top two players will still be there. It remains to be seen what the rest of their team looks like. If it's just their top two and they're a little bit weakened over the close season, then yeah, I think we've got a good shout.
Okay, you're listening to the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB or on podcast. I'm joined in the studio today by Chris Hammonds and Seb Finch of the Brighton & Hove Albion Power Chair team, and we've been talking all things wheelie football. We're talking just now about the improvement of the Brighton squad over the past few years, and Seb, you just touched on the fact that you had a big Danish adventure last October. Tell us about the fun you had there.
Yeah, we went to the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite hard to get there, and the Northern Thunder pulled out 10 days before. So they invited us to go in their place. So we had 10 days to arrange getting there. We had to drive with all our equipment, and just 2 days of driving.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got there, it was an amazing few days. We unfortunately didn't make it out of the group. We went out on goal difference.
Mm-hmm.
But you beat the eventual... It was the group of death, wasn't it?
Yeah,
you beat the eventual champions, though, didn't you?
We were the only team to beat them for about 4 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was a West Brom game, and the goal... They scored a goal that in England wouldn't have stood. There's a slightly different rule. In Europe, you're allowed to push the ball.
Uh-huh.
So you can literally force the ball and the chair over the line, whereas in England it's not allowed.
It's got to be hit in rather than pushed in.
The ball has to be rolling.
So,
isn't that slightly ludicrous that you have different rules across different countries?
Yes, I think it's one, just one of those things, unfortunately. When you play in Europe, the European rules apply. So that's the only significant difference that I'm aware of.
I mean, because the point I'm making here is that obviously with football, it's an international, it's a universal set of rules. You might have, you know, sometimes when there's some cases where there's goal line technology, which it doesn't actually isn't a rule in itself, or you've got, you know, the whole video referee thing that's coming in, which isn't a rule in itself. But to actually say, well, you, it's almost like in football, well, in Europe you can punch the ball in, but, you know, in England you can't. That sounds slightly silly.
Yeah, I guess the sport is fairly young still, though, and it's come from different origins. So the American-based game, if you talk about football in America, you know, it's different. They pick up the ball, and there's definitely that sort of angle internationally. When they talk about football, Japan is fairly like that as well. So we'll see a bit of that in the World Cup, I'm sure.
Sure. So talking of the Champions League, has Brighton qualified for the Champions League again this year?
We don't know.
You don't know?
No, we... I don't think there's going to be one... Next year, I think it's probably going to be the year after, I believe. It's not that clear for the information. We don't know. We think we may have, but...
Right. If there is a Champions League, you've qualified for it, but you're not sure it's
going
to happen.
Not necessarily. It depends on the number of places England get given as well.
Well, expanded. Do you know if it's going to happen? Do you know where it would happen?
I think there's talk of it being in... Austria.
Oh, right. Well, blimey, you guys are going to get some road trips in, aren't you?
Yeah. In the past, it's been a Champions League seasons happen every second season.
All right.
So you qualify on the second season. The Champions League we went to in October last year had actually been deferred. So it was from the season before.
Right.
The teams going to Europe were invited, as it were. Mm-hmm. So this season, technically, therefore, was a... or is a Champions League qualifying season, and we finished third, and that would normally be sufficient to see us in the next Champions League. However, funding for the sport is hard to come by, and this is a World Cup year, and the national authorities that govern the game haven't got the funding arranged at the moment to fund both World Cup and a European Champions League. So I think it's been funding dependent. And then whether we qualify, as Seb says, is really down to whether the English teams, England and France, are both given three teams to enter, being the top two nations from Europe. They're wanting to spread the game, quite rightly, and they're potentially going to be inviting teams, a team from Finland and Austria, which would mean both France and England losing their
or they could expand the competition.
Or do that, yes. Yeah. That would be nice to see.
Fabulous
as well.
If Brighton could host it, couldn't it? You know, the city of Brighton and Hove could host it.
Yeah.
You know, pad out the Brighton Centre, get plenty of people in watching, hopefully. You know, it'd be a great way to promote the sport.
One of the biggest issue, I believe, is around accommodation for the players. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of special needs and requirements for players. So one of the venues sort of being talked about potentially, if it was to be held in England, would be some place like Stoke Mandeville. So there's hotels next door to that have the beds and the hoists and stuff to assist with players.
Denmark was a special needs school, so they had all the accommodation there that was all kitted out for hoists, wet rooms.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a lot easier for people to stay.
Got ya. So we were talking about, okay, so let's hope that the Champions League is happening, and you know, that the Brighton do get their opportunity to go in there and shine, and who knows, bring back some silverware. But we were talking earlier about when you started playing power chair football, and basically you had your own chair and some tyres, and maybe, I don't know, your own gun or something, and, you know, whatever it was you needed to protect yourself. But nowadays, obviously, the equipment has evolved, and it's more up to date. So tell us about, you know, the wheelchair that you're in now compared to the wheelchair that you play football in.
So the wheelchair I'm in now is just a fairly standard chair. It's a...
I was saying it's a power chair. You're not being pushed around. You're driving yourself around.
Compared to when I play football in, the football one's a lot lower. It's lighter. It's got better acceleration. Better protection, obviously, for those things.
For crashes.
It hasn't got as many extra features and things. Right. Like this one goes up in the air.
I mean, yours is a real inspector gadget job, isn't it?
Yeah, so you wouldn't... all that obviously adds weight, which you wouldn't run in a football shoe.
So, I mean, and someone's, I believe you're also speed tested.
So yeah, before a game, we go on a rolling road.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a top speed that you're allowed to go in forward and reverse. So they check the speed of the chair to make sure you're not over the limits.
Right, what happens if you are? I mean, is it a case of you suspended or?
If you're over, you're allowed to turn the chair down and you get retested again. If you fail again, you can retest at half time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fail again, you're suspended.
Oh, right.
Also, at the end of a game, the ref will pick a player from each team to speed test again. And if they're over, they put the limit up a bit because the chairs are a bit quicker after a game because they're warm.
Mm-hmm.
But if you fail, you then have to wait an hour and do it again. And if you fail again, you forfeit the match.
Wow, and that's, oh, blimey. So you got to make sure that your mechanic, which is your dad,
is
you know, Spanners Finch is actually on the case.
Yeah.
So, and the grill at the front there, is there a kind of a universal shape that you have there? Because I believe it's kind of squared off. I mean, does anyone ever have it sort of rounded, or is it got to be a specific shape?
The old ones tended to be a bit more round. The new chairs, everyone's got these same square bumpers now, if they've got the Stratforce, which is the chair that was allowed in this season, that you have to get from America.
So, because you were talking earlier about sort of, I think you said Freddie's got his chair in. So, is it a case that there's kind of a, I don't know, a sort of like a beginner's chair, an intermediate chair, and a, for want of a better term, professional chair? Or is there kind of a sort of an ultimate chair that a given player will be able to play in?
I think, yeah, I mean, certainly with Albion in the community, we have club chairs, which are the old, what are called Storms. We do have one or two what are called TDXs. They spin on a sixpence, but the Storm is one where it's back-wheel drive, much like the Strike Force that we've got in at the moment. But they're heavier chairs, and they're not as responsive on the turn. So with the new ones, you can get a lot more spin. They are a little bit more twitchy, though, so you need to know what you're about when you're driving a Strike Force.
Yeah.
I must say I've not driven one personally. I've done the Storms. But so yeah, if you're starting out in the game, then Albion in the community have got club chairs that they bring along for club nights. We've got a couple of new players that have been trialling out in them at the moment. So yeah.
Because next week we've got the annual Julie Hodder Cup, which is a charity event named after the sister, a good friend of ours, Steve Darby. It's a kind of a day of wheelchair and power chair football. And obviously, the Albion power chair team, you know, come along and win every year. But there's people from, I think, Barclays and American Express. They come along and take part in the charity day themselves. Now, I was there last year. I had a go in one of those power chair things. They're impossible. I mean, even because I'm looking at Seb's chair here, and I think that the driving mechanism is similar. He's got a kind of a lever on his right hand side that's topped off with a golf ball, and it's just a kind of simple move back, move forward, left, right, and what have you. And I dare say there's a second one that does spins, and maybe you can do donuts or I don't know, do a flip in midair. I don't know whatever it is, but I just pushed it forward and it went bowling off right. And then I had to go at trying to kick the football with it, and no one tells you how to drive these things when you're doing it. I mean, there's an awful lot of skill involved in this, isn't there?
Yeah, I've tried it, certainly, say, in the old Storm chairs, and these guys just run rings around you. I mean, the chairs are their legs, though, so they know what they're doing with these things. It takes many years of practice and so to be able to control one of these things. And certainly, as I say, the sports chairs are very twitchy, so even the slightest little increment on the joystick and you can find yourself spinning it. An alarming rate of knots.
I was about to say it's a shame they're rear wheel drive, otherwise you could just do a few donuts on the gym floor. Obviously you they're representing Brighton and Hove Albion. Do you get much support from the first team themselves?
They've come down, haven't they?
They've
on
come
trainings,
down a
on training sessions, and
they've had to go in the chairs.
Yes, they did. Yeah, a couple of them did. That was a couple of years ago.
We've had Tony Bloom's been in a chair, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're driving like boy racers.
They were much like you and I when we got in the chairs. They're going all over the place.
But the thing is, I think therein lies the issue, is that when you jump in the chair, and you see the guys doing their power chest stuff, and there's some lovely passing, and there's some movement, and there's, you know, trundling along and whatever it is, but you think, oh, this looks great. And the likes of Seb and Matt and what have you, they make it look easy. But when you get in there, you get a newfound respect for everything that's gone on there, because, like I say, it's so tricky to do in the first instance. Hooray for the people that can go in there and do it after 5 minutes, but I don't think so. I mean, the first team, you know, because I'm just thinking that there was a kind of nice little photo call when you guys were in Nottingham, all towards the back end of the season. The Albion were playing at Forest, and you guys were playing your league matches at Nottingham. There seemed to be an awful lot of sort of, you know, mutual respect there from certainly a lot coming from the first team towards the power chair team.
Yeah, we were up in Nottingham, as you say, that weekend, and we had tickets for the match. Unfortunately, our last match on the Saturday only started at 1, so finished at about 2:45, and it was a short hop across to the City Ground.
But we just made it, didn't we?
Yeah, we just made it. But the hotel we stayed in, was also used by the first team. We travel up on a Friday, and we were sitting in the bar.
In the bar, loving it.
Just
footballers getting trolley the night before a game.
Just chatting. This is in the afternoon. This was, and all of a sudden, the Brighton team coach arrives, so the lobby was all of a sudden full of the first team.
Right.
And so,
who was more in awe of whom?
I think I was anyway. I was the first up, wasn't I?
Yeah. Chris Hewton was really nice. Had a really nice chat with him. He came over the Saturday morning and wished us all good luck for the day.
I mean, you obviously now know Cowdy, but I mean, you've got the other players that are sort of like, you know, doing the same thing. I mean, I think Knockout probably is, you know, I think his energy would actually power one of those wheelchairs, wouldn't it?
Yeah, he was first up to come and say hello.
Fabulous.
Nice fella.
Fabulous. I mean, we've heard from Seb as to what his dad, who's kind of, you know, been lassoed into helping out and actually finally getting into football. But what is your role, Chris? Because they're telling me you're manager.
Coach.
Coach.
So Stuart is the AITC.
Stuart Teeder.
So he's the manager. So he oversees both our second team and first team, and the training arrangements. I sort of got elected by the team 4 or 5 years ago as someone that they wanted to coach them. Haven't been released since. I love watching the game as well. So I do watch a lot of it on video, on the videos, and scour the internet to see what the latest tactics and plays are. We do video analysis on our games, on our opponents. So if we're up in Nottingham, we've got match footage of most teams now. So on the weekend you're coming up, we know what our fixtures are. So we'll review those, and we'll see where their strengths and weaknesses are. We'll put them up on a big screen, and we'll talk to the team about, this is how we play, this is how we approach this scenario, this is how we approach other scenarios. So we do the video analysis now. We take it quite seriously.
Right, the one thing I do like, actually, I've seen it, because I know that they're in the top division, is that whether it's at football or power chair football or Connect Four or Tiddlywinks, I don't care, if Brighton can beat Manchester United, and when you get results like Brighton 9, Manchester United 0, you think,
Man United are nowhere really at the moment. Did they get relegated?
I think they're in the playoff. They're in the playoff. They do a third from bottom in the Premier League, play third from top in the Championship to see who goes up and stays down.
Right.
I think Man U won that. So they're staying up playing them again this year.
Now I have to ask this, where are Manchester United based? Because let's face it, if it's to do with their fans, it won't be in Manchester, will it?
Probably Guildford.
So, no. the number of times we've said that on the Albion Rock, I don't care. Manchester United fans, I'm convinced, are all they congregate in Guildford. It's just what they do. Talking of big things, your old mucker, your best friend, or at the very least he calls you his best friend, is off to Florida very soon. He's good enough that he's actually managed to get an England call up. So tell us about Captain Matt.
So yeah, he's going Saturday, flying out to Florida. And then I think the tournament starts on Thursday for them. I think their first game's Thursday. He's had a great season and deserves to be in the England team, I think he should be in the starting four, personally.
Well, he might well be, he might well be.
I mean, Thursday.
To explain this, there is a kind of, I can't yet think of another way of putting it, but it's to do with mobility, and there's a certain amount of people. Actually, perhaps you could explain this better, either Chris or Seb, about certain players can play and certain players can't, down to some point system to do with mobility.
Yeah, they do.
It's classification, isn't it?
Yeah,
classification is. They do an assessment on you. Look at lots of things, arm strength, head movement, other factors that come into it. And there's two classifications, PF1 and PF2. PF1 are the sort of more severe disabilities, so I'm a PF1. PF2 are slightly stronger, have a bit more movement. And then if you have too much movement, you'd be classified as a PF3. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't be eligible to play.
Oh, right.
So the rules are that in your starting four, you have to have a minimum of two PF1s.
So I think what the issue is here is that hopefully Matt can start. It's just that he hasn't been assessed yet, as I understand it.
He has. And he's sort of in between, mm-hmm. I think, for a lot of stuff. He is strength-wise. He's a PF2, but he has his muscle spasms, and that means he can't move or can't play from there.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, he might potentially be a PF1.
And the PF1 is more likely to make him play. I mean, this is kind of sounds slightly perverse to do this about all to do with mobility rather than ability.
Yes, Seb's explained the requirements on the pitch. So yeah, it's a minimum of two PF1 players. Mm. And Matt has been classified nationally in the English league as PF2.
Mm-hmm.
And from a Brighton perspective, most of our players are PF1, so it hasn't really affected what the team that we put out on the pitch. But internationally, when we went to play in Europe, they wanted to give us an international classification. So the guys were all reclassified, and in that classification, Matt was then reclassified to PF1. But it's a watch, so they'll watch you, and they did, and they came back to him later in the week and said, actually, we've watched you play and we think you're a PF2, so he's back to PF2. And I think there's some discussion at the moment as to whether he's actually,
I think the database is still
database
down.
They're thinking he's PF1, so
okay, well,
so as a PF1 player, yes, you do have a greater chance of playing to some extent, because you need a minimum of two. If you've got three on the pitch, it doesn't matter, you can have four PF1s if you want. But
it's got to be a minimum of two. Sure. So what do you think of the chances of England bringing home the silverware?
I think they're one of the top teams that would have a good chance. I think the main rivals would be France, USA, and I think the Japanese are quite good as well. I know from my experience in Denmark, the French are good. I think they'll have a very strong team. I think the USA play a slightly different style of football. They play a more aggressive, sort of push the ball, whereas we play more of a passing.
More of a ticky-tacker game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, go on, Chris. Are we going to win the World Cup?
Are we going to win? As I mentioned earlier, I'm quite cautious. I would say we have a really good chance of getting to the final.
Mm-hmm.
A really good chance of getting to the final.
We've got France in the group games, haven't we?
If we can get our passing game going.
Mm-hmm.
When we played in Europe, we watched the two top French sides, and they both have an individual, single, very good player, but their strength in depth at the club level wasn't quite there, and that's one of the things we picked up on when we beat the top French team called Auch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the fortune of playing them last in our group, so we had the opportunity of, well, I don't know, I took the opportunity of watching them every one of their games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the night before our game against them, we went and had a training session up till, was it 9:30, 10:00 that evening, just trying out different things, trying out thoughts and ideas about how we would go about beating them the following day. And we put some of that to practice, and We right. managed to beat them, but that was with against a team with one. When you merge those two sides together and put the two very good players that they had in each team together, it's going to make them quite a force, I think.
Mm. So we're getting to the end of the show there. So I'm going to wrap up with one more question. I think, Seb, I've got to ask you this. What does it mean? I mean, bearing in mind you've been doing it for a while, what does it mean for you as a power chair football player to be playing for Brighton and Hove Albion in the top division in the country?
I think it's special to, you know, obviously play for the club you support is always something you want to do, and to be able to do it at the top level is, special.
Yeah, and have your best mate also to be a potential World Cup winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, what does it mean for you? I mean, what do you get from it?
I like watching the game. Visually, I like the game. I like the way the top teams, the top players are able to move that ball around and the skill required, because I sat in the chair, I know the skill required to get an accurate, full-blown, full-strength pass. It takes some skill, and I like watching the game. I like the opportunities it gives to the lads as well. There is no other, that I'm aware of, disabled team sport that caters for those more competitive with the disabilities these guys have got. It's good to see them getting the enjoyment out of it as well. So those are two main reasons.
Great stuff. Chris Hammonds and Seb Finch of Brighton and Hove Albion Power Chair Football Club, thank you very much indeed for coming in.